from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the North Pacific Council is taking up Gulf Chinook bycatch at its meeting in Anchorage. Alaskan fishermen are working together to help their counterparts in Japan, and Board of Fish nominations sail through the House Fisheries Committee. All that, and how many times must we remind people not to put seafood in their pants? Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Excessive bycatch of king salmon in Gulf of Alaska pollock trawl fisheries is a hot topic at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting in Anchorage this week. The advisory panel discussed it early in the meeting, and the council itself was expected to take it up Friday morning. Bycatch of Chinook has always been a concern, but after trawlers hauled in over 50,000 kings last fall, the council moved to take expedited action. Teresa Peterson is the Kodiak Outreach Coordinator for the Alaska Marine Conservation Council and serves on the advisory panel of the North Pacific Council.
The council has established this as the highest priority issue, and so there's commitment among council members to get some level of measures implemented in the Gulf as quickly as possible, and then also looking at some long-term solutions that may involve IFQ among, or co-op structure amongst the pollock fleet, or along the lines of a pollock rationalization.
Some of the measures being considered include a hard cap that would shut down the pollock fishery when exceeded and increased observer coverage. Peterson, reached during a lunch break at the meetings Wednesday, said there was considerable testimony against hard caps. She says the issue is a difficult one since both Chinook and pollock are important to Alaskans.
Chinook are an important resource for coastal communities. I mean, it's the Alaska state fish. But in addition, pollock is a very important resource to trawl industry and to our processing sector and our communities as a whole also. So the key is in finding the balance in these decisions.
King salmon returns to many Gulf River systems have been extremely low in recent years, prompting commercial, sport, and even subsistence fishing closures. Pollock fishermen in the Gulf are not allowed to keep their Chinook bycatch and must toss them overboard, where their mortality is considered to be 100%. Any kings that get loaded into the tanks and delivered are separated on shore and sent to be ground into fish meal. Peterson says the council is looking at rules that could allow them to be donated to charity. There is high anxiety over the price of herring sacro, both on the fishing grounds and among economists. As the herring roe fisheries get underway, economists predict that it may be the first of many seafood markets to be affected by the recent earthquake and tsunami in Japan. Melody Kay has more from Sitka.
According to the 2010 data from the Department of Commerce, a fourth of Alaska's exports go to Japan, and half of that is in seafood. While China overtook Japan as the largest consumer of Alaskan seafood last year, some markets like herring roe, which is made into an expensive New Year delicacy known as kazunoko, are very limited. Statewide this year, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game forecasts 66,252 tons of herring available for commercial harvest. By the time the roe is processed into kazunoko, much of that tonnage is reduced. Even then, industry experts like Christina Burge say as Japanese culture evolves, the supply of kazunoko far surpasses the demand for the product in Japan. Burge is the secretary and treasurer of the Pacific Kazunoko Association. She points to the 3,000 tons of unsold roe still in cold storage in Japan and the country's annual consumption of 6,000 tons a year as examples of the trend she sees.
If there was not an increase in consumption, then there was the prospect that in 2012 there would be 6,000 tons of carryover, which would be equivalent to the entire annual consumption in Japan. So that's potentially a very serious market situation.
Permit holder Chip Trinan fishes herring in the spring and gillnets for salmon in Bristol Bay during the summer. Is also secretary and treasurer of the Herring Marketing Association, a group of 48 herring sacro fishery permit holders who have tried to get processors to offer a baseline price to the season for the last 2 years. He, at least, was of the mind that they would likely catch their entire quota and that processors should find new markets for herring roe.
It's kind of like keeping our product on the market, and if it's cheap, then I think there will be, I guess, some innovators who will try to figure out a new way to use the product and hopefully broaden our market.
Burridge doubted there would be new markets at the scale that Japanese consumers demanded roe, even in declining years.
A lot of BC product and a lot of Sitka product goes into the gift market, and there's no alternative to that, and certainly no alternative that pays on the kind of scale that we've seen even in the last few years.
Last year, Kazunoko sold for $12 a pound in Japan. Gunnar Knapp is an economics professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage, says that other Alaskan seafood markets heavily influenced by Japanese demand, such as black cod, sockeye salmon, and pollock and salmon roe, may fare better in the current market climate.
Most of our fish have other market options, other places product can be sent besides Japan.
With herring roe, though, Knapp says it is a matter of price.
People in the seafood business are pretty resilient. You can usually sell something. The question is, what price can you sell it for?
Reporting in Sitka, this is Miladi Kay.
An Alaska seafood industry nonprofit says it has reactivated to help fishing communities hit by the earthquake and tsunami in Japan. The group is called AFIRM, the Alaska Fishing Industry Relief Mission. AFIRM board chair Larry Cotter says the Japanese seafood industry, like so much of Japan, saw major devastation from the tsunami.
Particularly in Ishinomaki and Shiogama, those are ports that have typically taken Alaska seafood product, our cod, our pollock roe, salmon roe, all of that pretty much went into those communities, and those facilities are gone. And the fishing fleet is, at least the small boats, as I understand it, are largely destroyed. There's just a tremendous scope of devastation and need for assistance over there.
AFIRM originally formed in 2005 to aid Gulf Coast fishermen struck by hurricanes Katrina and Rita. Secretary Treasurer Mark Vinsel says the organization raised about $35,000 at the time, and that helped facilitate the donation and transport of over $1 million worth of donated equipment, including a surplus boat lift from Valdez and a portable ice-making plant. Vinsel says AFIRM wants to do something similar for Japan.
We hope to be able to get some donations from fishing industry and fishing communities and help be able to leverage those cash donations with donations of targeted equipment or other logistics help, as we did with the Gulf of Mexico, but by contacts in the seafood industry and also contacts there as to what could actually be the most meaningful help. Hope align those and let cash contributions be leveraged to provide more help.
Vinsel says the organization is all volunteer and has no overhead, so 100% of the contributions go directly to relief efforts. Donations are tax deductible. According to AFIRM, the board includes members from several organizations and fishing-related companies in Alaska and Washington State. They include United Fishermen of Alaska, Cordova District Fishermen, the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Community Development Association, United Catcher Boats, Unicee Incorporated, American Seafoods, the Transportation Institute, and First Bank. AFIRM also lists U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski staffer Bill Wolf as an advisor. The organization plans to have a website online sometime this week at akjapanhelp.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by
the Pebble Partnership, pursuing jobs and opportunities for Southwest Alaska. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
There were only two objections Tuesday evening in the House Special Committee on Fisheries over the confirmation of three people nominated to the Alaska Board of Fisheries. Incumbents Bill Brown of Juneau and John Jensen of Petersburg were renominated to the board by Governor Sean Parnell, and he appointed Kodiak Sue Jeffrey instead of incumbent Mel Morris, a board veteran. The Special Committee on Fisheries is one of four stops nominations are scheduled to make in the next week. Brown and Jensen were opposed by Dillingham fisherman Robin Samuelson, who criticized some of their votes regarding Bristol Bay in the past.
I'd like to oppose Mr. Jensen's appointment to the Board of Fish. Mr. Jensen has done a marvelous job in sustaining the resources, but he doesn't support coastal communities of Alaska. In Bristol Bay, we had the 32-foot limit. Mr. Jensen's voted against all the advisory committees and local fishermen. We're trying to rebuild our fishery out there. keep more participants in a fishery, and it seems that Mr. Jensen is more concerned with making the rich richer.
The Board of Fisheries candidates must still face both the House and Senate resource committees before a joint confirmation vote on April 8th. The three-year terms begin on July 1st. A new project conducted through the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Homer Office aims to find out more about the movements of sablefish in the Gulf of Alaska. The first phase was recently completed, and now the department is asking for help from the fleet. KBBI's Marsha Lynn has more.
Now that 1,205 shiny new bright red tags have been put on individual sablefish in Prince William Sound, fish and game biologists want to find out where those fish wander.
How far do sablefish that are tagged in Prince William Sound go? From data between 4 and 14 years ago, we had a number of fish out, 400-some-odd tagged fish. And from those tag returns, they seem to range all the way out to the Aleutians, down to southeast, and even into Canadian waters. So the question is, how well mixed is that group of fish in Prince William Sound? If they're very well mixed with the whole Gulf population, then the National Marine Fisheries Service does an extraordinarily detailed survey, lots of stations out in the Gulf, and they assess sablefish as part of that. So if the stock portion in Prince William Sound is well mixed, we already have a big assessment going on and we can rely on that.
That's research biologist Ken Goldman, who heads up the new sablefish tagging project. He says they don't want to duplicate efforts by the feds, but better information on sablefish in that region will help managers to set catch limits.
We can run a model that would look at the tag return rate along with the age structure of the population, and we can run a model and for the first time actually start to set harvest limits based off of data from Prince William Sound. Right now it's been a 242,000 pound harvest limit for a number of years that does not change relative to any other assessment by the federal government or anybody else. I mean, sablefish are an important fish to Alaska fishermen. They're the highest dollar fish in the state when it comes to ex vessel value, and there are questions about the stock structure.
He says it's vital to the project that fishermen return tags from the fish they harvest. Each tag is about 2 inches long, attached to the base of the dorsal fin, and easy to remove.
We're looking for folks who catch tagged sablefish to return the tag along with their contact information. We'd like the date that they caught the fish, the location, and we'd prefer latitude and longitude on the location, but even a fishing game statistical area would be great. At worst, at least the bay you were in or the nearest headland somewhere where we can really get a reasonable idea of where you were. A length on the fish, a weight if possible. Some guys are able to weigh the fish individually. And then the tag has to come back with your contact information.
All fishermen who return tags will get the reward of a new cap with a brand new design. Plus, at the end of the season in August, 5 names will be drawn from a hat, and each lucky winner will get $100. Goldman encourages anyone with questions to contact him at the Homer Fish and Game office. In Homer, I'm Marsha Lynn.
A central Pennsylvania man faces robbery and assault charges after he allegedly stuffed a bag of frozen shrimp down his pants and attacked a grocery store security guard. Northern York County Regional Police say 37-year-old Brian McDaniel was spotted hiding the shrimp in his pants. McDaniel was caught in the store's parking lot by the security guard and a bystander. He's being held on $10,000 bail.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KCAW's Melody Kay in Sitka, KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, and KBBI's Marsha Lynn in Homer. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.